Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, May the 18th. And welcome to our commentary. You know, there are some really interesting birthdays. I always like to go back and look at on tree and check out birthdays and so on. So I got a couple of big ones today I want to share with you up front. On this day in 1920, John Paul II was born in Poland. Of course, he died. On this day, he, of course, was executed by the communists in 1918. And if you like the music of Perry Como, well, Mr. Perry Como was born on this day in 1912. I've got to check my list there. 1912, he died in 2001. So we got some big ones today. We don't usually have that many to remember, but today we sure did. John Paul II, Nicholas II, and of course, on a musical note, Perry Como. Let's think a little bit about some of the stories of today. I have a post coming out tomorrow where I talk about a big problem in public education, and I didn't realize it was that big, but it is. The New York Times ran a very interesting about the fact that there's over a million, in fact, 1.2 million students who are missing from public education. Literally, they're not going to school anymore. And it's not because the kids have disappeared or moved out of the country. Their parents have simply decided not to send them to school. And this is having a devastating impact, of course, on school districts. And if this were to continue, and I think that it will, you're going to have to see some massive layoffs in public education. You're probably going to see many teachers get laid off. And you're probably going to see a lot of school districts have to cut back facilities because they simply cannot support a shrinking tax base. I mean, basically, when 1.2 million kids are not going to school, what that means is that 1.2 million, not exactly 1.2 million, but, you know, roughly half a million or whatever parents are not sending their kids to school, that's a lot of money that isn't coming into some of our school districts. So it's a huge problem. It's a huge problem. And, you know, why did this happen? Well, it's always a combination of reasons. I think the pandemic had something to do with it. I think the teachers union, the way it mistreated many of the parents or did not listen to the parents during the pandemic. I think obviously parents are angry by whether kids were being taught in school. But I think at the end of the day, what happened to the teachers union is what happens to every monopoly. They don't listen to the customer. And the customer in this case were the parents. The parents were saying, open the schools. We want the kids back in school. And many school districts did not. Eventually they did because they had to. But I think clearly many kids' education was deeply impacted by the fact that they were at home rather than at school. So you see now the parents react to all of this by keeping from schools, and it's having an economic impact, no question about it. It's having an economic impact in many of our school districts across the country. So it's really a remarkable story, I think, of how to mismanage a situation. You know, I don't fault the teachers union or the school districts for wanting to be careful when the pandemic occurred. Obviously, they wanted to be careful like everybody else. But I think they went too far. They did not listen to the parents. And now the parents are saying, we're not going to send our kids to your school. Now, where are the kids going? Homeschooling has become a very popular option. Some parents are Catholic schools, for example, have become a very popular option because Catholic schools are relatively cheap compared to some of the other private schools out there. And in fact, you know, I have a friend here at church who knows a little bit about, you know, the Catholic schools. And he told me a couple of times that in many Catholic schools during the last year, the phone does not. And when the, you know, the receptionist or whatever picked up the phone, it was the same idea. A parent, a mother, a father saying, hey, how can I get my kids into your school? And they're not even Catholic. They just want to get their kids in school. They just want their kids in a school. And unfortunately, the public school system did not listen to the parents. And now the parents are fighting back. And the parents are going to win because the parents, after all, are tax money. And I think you're also seeing something else, too. There was something like this that happened in Ohio. There was something like this that happened in Arizona. And a lot of states where you're seeing many of the state legislatures moving in the direction of school choice, where the money follows the student. That is, you know, the money goes to the, and then the parent decides what school to send the kids to. And that's what you're seeing more and more of. And I believe, I'm quite sincere in this, I think in the next 10 to 15 years, the number of kids who are going to be attending non-public education, meaning private schools, homeschooling or whatever, is probably going to be 30 or 40% of the population. I'm pretty sure. I just feel that way because I talk to more and more parents who are so unhappy with what happened to their kids the last couple of years during the pandemic. So, you know, I think to a large extent, the teachers union can blame itself here. They're the ones who did not listen to the parents. They should have sat down with the parents and say, you know, let's work this out. Let me listen to you. But they didn't. And I think that's why this problem has become really what it is, which is a huge problem right now, that the kids are not in school. Any of the school districts are looking at a lot of empty seats and saying, wow, how are we going to get the money? Well, they're not. They're not going to get the money. They're going to end up having to downsize their operations. You know, there were some big primaries on Tuesday. I guess the most publicized one was the one in Pennsylvania for the U.S. Senate. As it stands right now, it's still too close to call. The difference between Merritt, I think that's his name, Merritt and Oz, those are the two, the one and two, they're separated by like 1,000 votes. I don't know how many more votes are still outstanding. Many of these outstanding votes are what they call mail-in votes, a lot of times military votes who come in. I do not understand, and I've had this criticism before, I do not understand why they don't count those votes first. A lot of those votes actually get there first. So why not just have so that then, you know, you can have the other votes? You know, why do they have to go days counting outstanding votes? It doesn't make any sense to me to do that. But anyway, that's where we are in Pennsylvania. The man who was supported by President Trump, Dr. Oz, right now has a lead of about 1,000 votes over Mr. Merrick, who was the choice of a lot of people. I really didn't have one candidate in this race, you know, because I don't know. I was just hoping that the Republicans would elect or select the most electable Republican. And from listening to people like Hugh Hewitt and some others who I follow on the radio, they were saying that Mr. Merrick was the more electable. We'll see. We'll see. But this is an important seat for the Republicans because this is a seat that is currently held by an incumbent Republican. So if you want to win the Senate back, you cannot lose the seats that you currently have. So this is huge. This big seat. Now, there's also a big story out of that primary. The Democrat, Mr. Fetterman, I think his name is, suffered a stroke a couple of days ago. So I don't know, you know, as I understand, he's going to recover, and that's good. I'm glad to hear that he's recovering. But nobody's really, he hasn't made any public appearances since, to my knowledge. So you have to wonder, you know, a man suffers a stroke. Is he going to be able to campaign? Is he going to be able there's still a lot of time. There's 6 months left. But the campaign is really going to get hot probably after Labor Day. But is Mr. Fetterman going to be able to campaign? I don't know. I mean, he just suffered a stroke. So, well, we wish him well, but can you campaign in that medical condition? I don't know. But that's going to be a factor, obviously, as that election goes. I got to tell you that I'm really sick and tired of the way the Democrats are making or using or playing with politics or playing with the tragedy in Buffalo for political reasons. Look. This young man who did this was obviously a troubled young man who had mental problems. He should have never been able to buy a gun. There should have been a background check. There should have been information to stop him from getting a gun. So what I see in Buffalo is not just a young man who killed a bunch of black citizens. What I see in Buffalo is a young man and a system that failed the people. When you have a young man with these kinds of mental problems who has threatened to kill people before, there needs to be a background check. There needs to be information in that background check so that when the owner of the gun shop checks the background check, it comes up as rejected or negative. And then I assume that automatically refers to the police, and the police can then go to the young man's house and say, why do you want to buy a gun? That did not happen here. That did not happen here. And, you know, I thought President Biden's remarks were unfortunate. He's trying to use this for political reasons. He wants to be the uniter in chief, but he continues to be the divider in chief, continues to divide the country, and all this garbage about white nationalism and white terrorism, supremacy. That's all that it is. It's just a bunch of garbage. And what we need to be about is this young man and his mental problems. And all this talk about the manifesto that the young man wrote. Look, psychiatrists, I've listened to interviews with psychiatrists who the first thing they tell you is, don't take very seriously what these people write in their manifesto. Half the time, the manifesto contradicts itself several times. You know, it's a document written by a mentally troubled young man who is not really thinking through or rational what he's saying. So don't take it too seriously if he says this or if he says that. He's a troubled young man. He should have never been on the street, and he should have never been able to buy a gun. So the real question to me is, why did the city of Buffalo and why did the state of New York fail the citizens by not putting this young man's information in the background check? That, I think, is what needs to happen next. What needs to happen next in that investigation? Well, a little bit of history again on this day in history. This is one of my stories. It was on this day in 1860. So that means we're going back 162 years, right? It was on this day in 1860 that the GOP, or the Republican Party, nominated Abraham Lincoln. And Abraham Lincoln went on to win the election. It was a very difficult election. There were four candidates, and it was just a very difficult election for Abraham Lincoln. But he won the election by getting enough electoral college votes to get in. And then, of course, he was elected president of the United States. And within days, I think, of taking over, many of the southern states began to leave the Union. But it was today, 1860, that the GOP nominated its first. I think that Lincoln was the first, maybe not the first, well, he was the first Republican president, but maybe not the first to be nominated. But to say the least, the greatest of all of our presidents, Abraham Lincoln, nominated on this day in 1860. I say the greatest with all due respect to George Washington, but clearly Abraham Lincoln and George Washington, both of them rank up there among our greatest presidents. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Enjoy the heat in Texas. Apparently, we're going to have it for a while, so enjoy it as much as you can. Bye-bye, everybody.